Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Travis Vance with Fisher & Phillips. Have Steve Barnett, the Director of Health and Safety from TNT, in the courtroom as well, as long as my associate, Sharon Saul. Main issue before the court this morning is, should lowering the boom or disconnecting the block from a crane, actions that occur multiple times in the normal operation of a crane with it fully intact in an operation mode and it's sometimes still moving, constitute disassembly as set forth in the regulation at issue 29 CFR 1926-1407.
Just set the predicate. I don't see, or I'm not aware of any regulation in CFR that directly addresses pre-disassembly. In other words, here the four men met. They decided upon a plan to disassemble the crane. Part of that plan was lowering it. During the process of lowering the crane and doing some disassembly, they were going to lay it on the bed of a truck and further disassemble. I'm not trying to sneak any words past you, but I don't see any reg cited about pre-disassembly planning or implementation of the disassembly plan. In other words, the only reg, as you say, is the reg 1926.1407. So if this accident is not covered by 1926.1407, there is no reg covering it.
Your Honor, that's actually not correct.
Okay, it would be under straighten me out.
Yeah, that would be the normal operations regulation if it is covered, which is just one page over 1408. So what we had here was set up or rigging down. The standards say specifically that assembly disassembly means assembly or disassembly of equipment, which is defined in the regs to include cranes like the mobile crane that was being used in this case. So it's very clear, it's not ambiguous, that disassembly occurs when you start disassembling the equipment. And what we have here, this is probably further along than what I wanted to get to at this point, but OSHA simply cited the wrong standard. It would be 1408, normal operations, not 1407. But it's too late for them to do that now, so they want the Fifth Circuit to go back and say, we're going to try to squeeze in all this pre-stuff, pre-planning setup into 1407 as opposed to 1408. Now, granted, we don't think it matters if it was 1407 or 1408 because the Yates decision out of this circuit would throw out the citations in any event because what Mr. Benson did, the crane operator, was solely his actions. He was operating the crane. Mr. Larrison, who was holding the Beckett at the end of the hoist line, didn't run the hoist line into the power lines. That was Mr. Benson.
But Benson blamed Larrison as the spotter.
Yeah, he may have blamed him for the spotter, but the plan was that he would swing the boom to the right, but instead he went straight down.
So you're arguing both grounds that you prevailed on in front of the ALJ, Mr. Duncan.
That's correct. Yes, Judge Duncan was right twice.
The first time you go up on the regulation, inapplicability or applicability,
yes, right.
And the commission's unanimous in their interpretation, is it correct that the standard review, we have to decide that was arbitrary and you're comfortable with that standard?
Yes, Your Honor, because it doesn't follow the law. So let me say, here are the ramifications for what you all have today. If taking the block off and lowering the boom is disassembly, TNT has 600 cranes. They're a very large outfit. They've got 600 to 800 operators, okay? Every time they take the block off, every time they lower the boom, they have to have an assembly and disassembly director at the location.
I thought Larrison only showed up to disassemble it. I thought the project was over.
Well, the project, as far as the antennas on the towers, was over. But there's a setup process and a rigging down process that you get before you actually disassemble. The standards say...
So there's normal operations, then there's what you're calling rigging down, and then there's disassembly that only occurs on the trailer?
Yeah, it's when you start taking the pins out. It's when you actually physically take the equipment
apart. Why would 1407's concern, the goal being to protect people from power lines, how would that ever make sense when something's down on a trailer? There aren't going to be power lines down by the trailer.
Yeah, that's a good point. So if you look at 1407D, which is where we're at, it says no part of a crane shall get into a power line. That's the only time that this subpart says a crane versus equipment. Here's why that's important. Is because equipment refers to the actual crane that's being disassembled, as defined in the standard. A crane, the only time that appears is in the definitions when it defines an assist crane. So an assist crane is referred to as a crane. So here's how that works, Your Honor. An assist crane comes in, and it's assisting moving the jib or parts of the boom.
This is the helper crane
Correct.
That hadn't showed up.
Yeah, so this assist crane's not even there at this time. That crane is the one that's more likely to get into the power lines, if that makes sense, because it's got its boom elevated. It's assisting with moving the jib and the boom parts. That's why 1407D says a crane, whereas everything else says equipment. And if you look at 1408, the normal operations power line, it goes back to equipment. Because in 1408, which is normal operations, it's talking about the actual crane that's doing the work on the job.
This isn't what's called a tower crane, correct?
It's a mobile crane. It's not
stationary.
But the
tower crane is the one with the sections that you jump up and down.
Yeah, the tower crane is...
And you would agree that is, when you're taking the sections off, that is a disassembly.
Correct.
Is it because it's, from a dictionary standpoint, it's taking apart?
Yeah, you're literally taking apart parts of...
So lowering is not, but taking apart is.
Well, it's two different types of cranes.
Yes, I know.
So if you look at Ole Miss, they've got these utility trains on the back of a truck out here. I saw one this morning. Mm-hmm. OSHA, in its own enforcement directive, says that if you basically fold out and pin one of those cranes, that's not assembly or disassembly, because it's set up. Exactly what happened here. All they were doing is lowering the boom, even though Benson wasn't supposed to be doing that, and they took the block off. That happens a dozen times a day in the field. So what you guys are faced with is,
we're not you guys.
I'm sorry about that, Your Honor. Apologize.
We're a panel of federal judges.
I apologize. It's a colloquial. I apologize
for
that.
Well, leave the colloquials out of here. All right, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. And so, Your Honors, this court is charged with, in a situation where something that happens dozens of times a day, if this court finds that is a disassembly procedure, then TNT and other crane operation companies would have to come in and assign an assembly-disassembly coordinator for that task that happens dozens of times a day.
I'm not understanding your point. Obviously, you're raising and lowering throughout the day if work is going on. The parade of horribles is always a good argument to be making. But it seems to me it often is overdone. Why is the activity that was going on here that was preparatory, not to other things, but was preparatory to disassembly? Why is it incorrect to look at that as properly covered by regulation, because the whole activity only has one purpose, as opposed to the rest of the time of the day when the crane is being operated, it has other purposes? So it's not as if every time you're raising and lowering the crane, you got to roll under 1407.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that the consideration there is that
what happened at this disassembly that's not a disassembly that is the same as occurring all throughout the day when the crane is being operated?
At this particular time, the disassembly would not occur until it was lowered onto the trailer.
Well, what I'm asking is, what happened before what you call disassembly that is the standard operation of the crane?
Yes, Your Honor, the lowering of the boom and taking off the block.
Okay, but this lowering of the boom and taking off the block was for a specific purpose of disassembly. So it's not as if you're not disassembling that 1407 is going to apply just because you're lowering the crane.
As Judge Duncan noted, Your Honor, there's no dispute that they were getting ready to disassemble the crane. And the specific standard here does not apply until you actually physically disassemble the boom or the jib. Yes, Your Honor. And Judge Barksdale, again, I apologize for the colloquialism. For this court, Your Honor, the key consideration is, are we going to change the demarcation line of when it becomes disassembly? Because in the standard, it says disassemble the equipment. And the commission ignored the equipment part and just focused on the assembly versus and or disassembly and said it wasn't further defined. But it specifically says disassembly of the equipment, which is defined to be a crane in operation under another part of the standard.
I've gone back and looked at your brief because you cited to subpart 1408. The only place you cite to 1408 in your opening brief is because it's cited in a parenthetical within 1407, which is the reg at issue here. So you don't discuss it in your brief. And then in your reply brief, you don't even have it cited. So how in your blue brief are you arguing that 1408, not 1407, specifically should have applied?
Yes, Your Honor, because it's a difficult argument to make because it would be us telling the Secretary and OSHA which standard to cite. And so for purposes of oral argument, just to let Your Honors understand how that you're not just letting crane companies off the hook here, that there's another standard that would address normal operations, would include the rigging down and the setting up process. Well,
apparently 1408, because the concerns within 1407, not having your boom close to a power line or too close to a power line. So I'm just at a loss as to why in your opening brief you didn't urge, you know, a regular rule of statutory construction. Well, of course this doesn't apply under 1407. It is covered under 1408. But you don't say that in your brief. You just cite it in a parenthetical, which is part of the reg.
Yes, Your Honor, and I understand what you're saying there. I guess our position would be is that we're not asking the government to cite us under any standard. But the argument from a policy standpoint is that this court is not leaving the government without recourse against a company that operates in normal operations, a crane or a boom, into the power line.
If we, you just have very little time, so yes, but if we decide that this interpretation of 1407 isn't arbitrary, you would still say your client, TNT, the company, isn't liable because they couldn't have predicted Benson's misbehavior?
Yes, sir.
His violation of your own safety
yes,
rules?
Yes, sir. There was no predictability that the hoist line or the boom would get into the power lines under any circumstances. It's just a matter of are we doing disassembly versus doing set up or rigging.
But the logic of our Yates exception requires what elements?
Basically, the Yates is the key part of Yates is that the secretary, not the respondent employer, has the burden to show that Benson's actions were foreseeable. And Yates only applies if Benson is the only bad actor, so to speak, and not the entire crew. Our position is that Benson is in control of the crane, of the boom, where the direction is. He's the one that encroached upon the power lines. He's the sole actor, the bad actor, as far as violating a standard or getting into the power lines. And that would not be foreseeable to TNT. And I'll get further into it, I'm sure, on rebuttal. But one of the positions from the commission is that we didn't discipline our operators. There was other than Mr. Benson, obviously, there was no evidence of discipline operators that got into power lines. Well, fortunately, this is not something that happens very much. You don't want booms or hoist lines to get into power lines, and therefore, that's why you wouldn't see any discipline. It's such a unique situation. That's why it would not be in there. Thank you again very much, Your Honor.
Let me ask you a question, though, we're past time, because in part I want, the Department of Labor wants to respond to it, too. This is not a particularly significant fine that was imposed on TNT, it seems to me. What is the significance of this case as caused it to be brought to us?
As far as the cost, Your Honor?
What is the significance of this case that causes it to be brought
sure,
to
Your
us?
Sure, Your Honor. The most significant case is just the ramifications for the industry. If this court finds that what TNT was doing at the time of the accident was disassembly, then it changes how TNT and other companies must staff and approach normal operations, because up until this point, what was happening there before they actually started disassembling the physical equipment was normal operations and not under the 1407 assembly disassembly. That's a significant cost to employers, and there's not been any rulemaking process to go through that so that employers can weigh in on that and get prepared for what the cost would be to the company.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You have time for a vote.
Good morning, and please the court. I'd like to start with the applicability of the cited standards to the conduct at issue on May 15th, 2016.
How about starting with the position taken today, perhaps it's too late in the case to say, well, this act, this quote, misconduct, close quote, is covered by subpart 1408, not subpart 1407.
Yes, Your Honor, it is, that is an incorrect understanding of the power line safety rules in OSHA's crane standards. So the power line safety rules are divided up by the phase of work that the employer is in at the given time. So we have these assembly disassembly section that applies to the assembly phase and the disassembly phase. When you're engaged in these processes to put the crane together so it can be used, or then take it apart so it can be taken from the work site. Then you have separate power line safety rules that apply to the operations phase. So that's when you have an assembled crane and you're using it for its business purpose. So in this case, they had been using the assembled crane to put antennas on top of communication towers. And then you have a third section that applies to travel of the crane on the work site with no load attached to it. And so that's a third section that has different considerations than operations, even though they both concern a fully assembled crane. So the question then is, which phase of work were they in when these violations occurred? And it's clear from the undisputed facts, many of which have already been recounted here, that they were engaged in a disassembly process when these violations occurred. And we know that because they had finished the operations phase. It's undisputed that they finished using the crane to put antennas on communication towers, and then this four-man crew met for the specific purpose of taking apart the crane and taking it off of the work site. They met and they created their disassembly plan, and then they started executing that plan, removing the attachment from the end of the line, and then trying to lower the boom into position so that it could be physically taken apart. So it's clear from these facts that the work that they were engaged in was a disassembly process, and that means the disassembly standards in 1407 apply to it. So this phase-based scheme is something that TNT has essentially ignored throughout this case.
Well, I imagine counsel, when I extended his time, didn't convince you, but respond to what he was saying. He's indicating that the crane industry, TNT at least, is not operating the way you say that they have to, that they see they're still in normal operations during the part when this electrocution occurred, and you are imposing new obligations on them unknown to the industry. You got, other than disagreeing, which I'm just presuming, why don't you give me more of a response?
Yes, Your Honor. So this phase-based approach was not OSHA's initial idea. This came from the negotiated rulemaking that produced the cranes rule. So a committee of industry stakeholders, crane users, crane manufacturers, crane operators, were assembled to draft the initial proposal of that became this crane standard. And they came up with this system, and OSHA agreed to it since it was their consensus recommendation. And then they promulgated this scheme through notice and comment rulemaking. So it's entirely false if it doesn't reflect the way that the industry operates, or that industry stakeholders like TNT didn't have an opportunity to speak up
What if they participated in the rulemaking and got in the phrase of equipment? So disassemble, dictionary meaning means take apart, equipment. And what they're really worried about is the end of every day. They're not taking the crane down, they're just lowering the boom because they don't want the winds to push it. If the exact same electrocution had occurred just at the end of the day when they're lowering the boom, would they be violating 1407? Because they've done exactly what they did here. Let's assume Larison's there, he's helping do the crane project. The antenna still has to be put up the next day. But they lower the boom. They don't take it apart, they lower it. Is that violating 1407?
Well, if they're lowering it for the purpose of disassembly as part of a disassembly process, then yes, they have violated 1407, because in that case, they are in the disassembly phase. Certainly, it's true that booms are raised and lowered during the operations phase. They could also be raised and lowered during the travel near power lines with no load phase. So the discrete action of moving the boom up or down or left or right.
But you agree the boom wasn't taken apart. I don't want to sound too literalistic, but that seems to be the dictionary definition of disassemble.
Correct.
And they're suggesting that the industry really relied on that plain meaning.
I agree with you that certainly disassembly means to take apart the equipment. And indeed, that is the goal of every disassembly
process.
But
no equipment was taken apart when this power line was hit.
No equipment had yet been taken apart.
That's sort of the problem, right?
Well, I think it's a problem for TNT, but not necessarily for the Secretary.
But maybe you did, but answer again the hypothetical. Let's say exactly the same facts occurred, but it was at the end of the day and they're lowering it, contemplating more work the next day. Could you bring a 1407 citation?
If I understand your hypothetical, the answer would be no, because I believe you're saying that they did not finish using the crane for operations and assemble a four-man crew for the purpose
of
disassembling
the crane.
So
Benson sees it's within 20 feet, and all the 1407 about de-energizing and having a spotter doesn't apply because they're going to come back the next day.
Right. If they're still in the operations phase,
okay,
and they haven't gathered and started carrying out this disassembly,
okay,
plan, but they're not in the disassembly phase, and then you're under...
So it's less anyway taking apart equipment than what we have to assess who the people were and why they were there.
Exactly. We need to understand the phase of work based on why they were carrying out this work. Because as the proposed rule explained, there are different circumstances, mm-hmm, at issue when you're engaged in
assembly.
Is there
case law, and I don't mean to interrupt, but,
no, sure,
but Judge Duncan, the ALJ, mm-hmm, was relying on this old steel contractors case that predated the relevant no disassembly. But
right,
do you have something post the relevant that speaks to this phasing issue?
You know, there really isn't, Your Honor.
Okay.
There haven't been many cases that tease out this difference between the phases in 1407. I'm not sure there are any cases of that.
And remind me, what did the commission say about steel contractors?
So
right then, but it's not right now.
Sure, right. So steel contractors was a general duty clause violation from 1980 is when the commission, or it wasn't the commission, it was an ALJ. An ALJ made a decision based on a general duty clause citation that would have been issued in the 70s. And so the concern in that case was they were going to be disassembling a crane, but essentially the disassembly process had stopped and a single employee just sort of went rogue and randomly started banging pins out of a boom that was partially elevated and part of it landed on him. It was a crazy set of facts, and it's completely analogous to the instant case because the crew was not working together collectively to disassemble a crane as they were doing here. They had specifically stopped any work on the crane. They weren't in any phase at all. They had left, some of them had left to go get certain equipment, and this one employee took it upon himself to start trying to take apart a boom on his own.
So the commission,
yes, sir.
The hypothetical that Judge Higginson was discussing, it's one thing to say that 1407 would not apply, as you understood, that was just end of day, leaving the work site, come back the next day, rev up the crane again. Would 1408 then apply to what was occurring under that scenario? I mean, what would control the safety regime in just lowering the crane at the end of the day? Exactly the facts of this, but disassembly was not going to be occurring that day.
Right. My understanding is that if they had not proceeded to the disassembly phase yet, they haven't gathered the crew and made their plan and started executing this multi-step effort to take it apart, then you know they had been operating the crane, they were using it to put things on communication towers, and they just brought it down for the end of the day. That would seem to be still in the operations phase because we haven't changed.
So what would control safety rules there?
The 1408 is the power line safety rule.
And so what happened here might have violated some other safety protocol?
If they applied.
If they were
certainly
not disassembling at the end of the lowering?
It is theoretically, yeah, absolutely. So if you were to say that in this hypothetical, they hadn't started their disassembly process yet, and they...
You really are reluctant just to accept the hypothetical.
Well, I'm
the
sorry.
Hypothetical
I
is they were not going to disassemble. They were just lowering it for the day to use the next day. So that's the hypothetical.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm just trying to clarify because the interpretation the Secretary has given is specific to the facts of the case. So
but
I just want to understand.
But John, just to, I think to clarify...
Yeah.
They're suggesting the industry is worried about your phasing you, because
right.
you say, oh, well, we all know this was disassembly because what? The antenna were up there or because Larison and the disassemblers had shown up? The reason I think he's suggesting that's a difficult rule is the helper crane hadn't shown up yet. So maybe we would date the phase of disassembly only when the necessary helper crane had arrived. But if it hadn't, factually in this case, that's sounding like something after normal use, but before disassembly. There's yet another phase.
First, Your Honor, a point of clarification. The helper crane was on site.
It
just
was.
Wasn't in position yet. It was sitting by the main entrance of the work site waiting for a signal to join them. So that's something to keep
true. Let's say the helper crane had not yet arrived.
Yeah.
Would you be standing in front of us saying this is still disassembly?
Yes, Your Honor.
You would.
Yes,
so,
we would. Because
so it's the people. It's when the people that are supposed to disassemble. That's when the phases shift.
That's right. So the relevant facts are, and again, this is something that is discerned from the circumstances of the work, right? So we have to look at more than one point of fact. And the point of facts that we're looking at are operations were finished. 4-man crew gathered together for this express purpose of taking the crane apart and getting it off of the work.
Both are necessary, so the industry knows. It's not just operations are finished, but the removal crew has shown up. Both are necessary for 1407.
For the Secretary's interpretation in this case. In this case, these are the facts that have persuaded the Secretary and then also the Commission that they were engaged in the disassembly phase.
Okay, those two things.
Right, and so then they started carrying out that plan. That
can
wasn't
we get
just
back to my hypothetical, which is...
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, I interrupted.
So it was the end of the day only. What would have controlled the safety mistakes that might have occurred in just lowering it for the end of the day and hitting a power line?
Do you mean which standards would have applied, Your Honor?
Which rule? Would it be 1408? Would it be something else?
Well, right, Your Honor. If they were engaged in operations at that point, and part of the equipment could have come within 20 feet of an energized power line.
No, not
line,
operations. You described the operations. The operation was to lower the crane at the end of the day so everybody could go where they stay for the night and come back the next day and rev it up again. What controlled safety mistakes that occurred, an electrocution that occurred at that time?
If an electrocution occurred during that lowering.
Yeah, if the crane had hit the line in the same way that it hit it this time.
Right.
What would have governed your decision-making or the OSHA's decision-making on whether any violation occurred?
Right. So that, Your Honor, to answer your question, it would be 1408. So that would be the operations section would apply to that work, to that phase of work, the operations phase. And then there are similar but substantively different requirements in 1408 compared to 1407.
But you don't have spotters out there necessarily. You don't have the variety of things that happened under 1407.
Well, actually, the precautions, since you mentioned a spotter, Your Honor, are very similar, and a spotter is one of the ways you can comply with the relevant rules in 1408 that would have applied if it was operations. For what it's worth, TNT wasn't, if this 1408 applied, TNT was not complying with that either. They didn't have one of the things you have to have in place when you're operating a crane near a power line and part of it could get within 20 feet of a power line is you have to have elevated warning lines in place to ensure that the crane operator can see where the power line minimum approach distance is and not breach it. No dispute they didn't do that here. So there's no question here that TNT did not take any actions to ensure that part of the equipment did not encroach on the power line during this process.
Well, it's important for everybody here, certainly the two sides represented as well as the court, that whatever we do is consistent with whatever the clarity that was intended to be provided by these regulations has provided, and not to sort of alter the balance or alter the applications of these different regulations. And certainly there are different views of such things in most cases, and your friend on the other side really is saying this is not how it has been interpreted. Do you have any sense of how to gauge whether OSHA in this case has come up with a novel way of addressing this?
Well, Your Honor, I would just repeat what I mentioned before, which was that this wasn't something
that
just came about. This is from
a
notice and comment rulemaking.
But it's where we are now.
Right.
It's one thing to say what was done before, but insofar as the application of it here, I guess we could go back in all the notice and comments and whatever else and see everybody knew exactly this. Is that what you're saying? Or how do we know that this actually is the resolution that the regulations had intended.
Right, so I think you can look at the notice and comment rulemaking, you can look at the preamble of the standard, which specifically...
Have you directed us to relevant parts in your briefing?
Absolutely. If you look at the preamble to the standard, it specifically gives the work that they were engaged in, lowering the boom into position for dismantling, as an example of disassembly work to which 1407 applies. And this is why this case is so clear-cut from the Secretary's perspective. The notice and comment rulemaking said, when you are doing your assessment at the beginning of 1407 to determine if your disassembly process could come within 20 feet of a power line, you have to take into account the distance the boom will be in from the energized power line when you are lowering it to the ground, because lowering the boom to the ground is required in most disassembly processes. So OSHA specifically gave this as an example of conduct that it would consider disassembly work to which the 1407 rules applied. It gave that notice to the public, it invited comment on it, and no one disagreed with it. It's in the final rule, and it's also embodied in the standard. So it's TNT's position that, well, this is just not how people operate, is disproven by the rulemaking record and by the existence of these disassembly and assembly and disassembly standards that cover not just discrete phases of assembly and disassembly processes when things are taken apart or pulled together, but rather the entire process. It requires action both before and throughout assembly and disassembly processes to ensure that employees are safe throughout them. This is evident not just from the preamble, but from the text of the standards itself. For example, if you look at standard number 1404H, which is general requirements for assembly and disassembly processes, it requires the assembly-disassembly director to address certain hazards at certain points in the process. And number 11, paragraph 11, requires them to assess the backward stability of the crane during three points in the process, one of them being when components are attached or removed, the two other being before the upworks or the superstructure of the crane is swung in any direction, and also anytime the equipment travels during the process. So that standard alone tells us that TNT is wrong to suggest that the scope of assembly and disassembly is limited to these discrete moments when pieces of equipment are physically taken apart or connected.
When this went back the second time to Judge Duncan, at that point he said, well, TNT still isn't accountable because they couldn't have predicted that Benson would violate Section 13 and all the hazard rules. What's the quick answer from you before your time runs out?
Thank you, Your Honor. The quick answer, one, is that this Yates exception to the ordinary imputation rule is just completely inapplicable in this case. It's the law of this circuit and every circuit that when a supervisor has knowledge of a subordinate employee's violative conduct, that knowledge is imputed to the company. And that's what happened here. So all four employees were engaged in disassembly work at the time of the violations. Mr. Benson, the supervisor, had the knowledge of his three subordinate employees' engagement in the conduct. Mr. Larison was holding on to the end of the hoist line. Mr. Ray was positioning the trailer. Mr. Ryan was standing behind the trailer and bringing him into position. So all four people were participating, and Benson's knowledge of his subordinates' misconduct is imputed to the company without any additional showing. So this narrow Yates exception just has no applicability here whatsoever. That only applies where the secretary or the commission is trying to impute the supervisor's knowledge of his or her own misconduct directly to the employer, which is not happening here. Additionally, the commission reasonably and correctly determined that TNT did not have a safety program that was adequate to reasonably prevent these violations. It did not have a work rule that mirrored 1926-1407B3, in that it did not have a rule that required the use of a dedicated spotter or one of the other encroachment precautions listed in the standard if part of the crane could come within 20 feet of an energized power line. It also found that TNT's system for checking its employees' compliance with safety rules, which was an audit system, was inadequate. It was not used at this work site at all, even though the work went on for a week and was dogged by rain and therefore created dangerous and more difficult working conditions. And it also found that TNT was not conducting these audits with any ascertainable frequency to know that employees' compliance was being checked. I see I only have 1 minute left. So do you have a question, Your Honor?
Well, just on one thing you said, I thought when I read Section 13, they did say spotter had to be there. You're saying that's not there?
So what the commission found, Your Honor, is that it does say in its rules, if necessary, use a spotter. But it does not say when it is necessary to use a spotter.
Okay.
So the OSHA standard makes it clear that you're required to use a spotter or one of the other precautions if any part of the equipment could come within 20 feet of the line during the process.
Could come.
Could come. So you make that assessment, if yes, apply measures. They don't have that in their rules. It just ambiguously says if necessary.
Nice.
And then the last point that I'll make is that TNT did not offer any evidence that it ever enforced any of its power line safety rules before this accident occurred. As you mentioned, this is a large company with many, many crane operations. Never, ever have they produced any records of any discipline for an employee violating a
or
power
audits,
line safety rules.
People going to work sites?
No audits either, Your Honor. So given this evidence, the commission reasonably and correctly determined from substantial evidence in the record that the safety program was inadequate to reasonably prevent these violations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honors, may it please the court. Just one point of clarification there with respect to the audits. The courts, my understanding, found that there was no audit of this Georgetown location where the accident occurred, but there was evidence of audits of other locations. As I noted before, TNT has 600 work sites. They have about 53 safety directors now, which is an enormous amount of safety professionals on their team. It would have been a lower amount at that point, but close to 53. The 53 gentlemen can't be at 600 locations on any given time. And so we think the TNT safety program is absolutely robust. With respect,
I thought Mr. Pierce had testified there were very few audits. So.
He testified, Your Honor, I can't remember the numbers, but he did testify there were audits. It's just that they said there was, the commission had a concern that there was no audit of this particular job site.
Okay.
With respect to your dialogue with counsel, Judge Higginson, I just wanted to go ahead and elaborate on that with respect to the end of the day. So
right.
Let's say that they take the block off, they lower the boom, and they never come back to that job site the next day. Maybe they were going to disassemble the next day, but they decide that something comes up and a different crew has to go to that particular location. They have to move the crane because of weather. They want to do work on that job site in another location, so they travel the crane over there. So what OSHA is saying is that you have to predict what may happen in the future at the end of the day. If you don't use that crane again, then going back in time, when you drop the block, when you lowered the boom, you had to have the assembly and disassembly requirements in place at that time. And Judge Southwick, that's the concern, is that if this court decides that what TNT was doing at the time of this accident, it's going to be so broad and far afield from what the standard actually says. Counsel noted some things.
Well, let me ask you before you leave that point.
Yes,
it seems to me that TNT was operating as if they were disassembling, but it just didn't work. They had the crew out there. They went through the planning for the disassembly. They had a spotter, and it just wasn't done efficiently. What's your answer to that? Weren't you following protocols for disassembly?
We were following protocols for the Judge Higginson's point is that sort of.
What's your point?
Yeah.
The midpoint, and I agree with Judge Higginson, is that it was a rigging down setup situation for
but
disassembly.
Weren't you following protocols for disassembly?
No,
because
Your Honor.
Because what would you have done differently if you had thought this was disassembled from the very beginning? If you had already were aware of OSHA's view, what would you have done differently than you did do?
Well, certainly TNT, it was not foreseeable that Mr. Benson would get the hoist line into the power line for
sure. Well,
that's
something different. That's just the operation wasn't well done.
Yeah.
So what would you have done if you had known it was clear as could be that this was a disassembly operation from the beginning? What would have been different other than you would like to say he was done better?
Yes, Your Honor.
You would have had four people out there. You would have had a spotter. You would have had, what would have been different?
With respect to this rigging down process, this would have been, it would have been the same, but it wasn't guaranteed that the disassembly would have been done that day or that same location. There could have been changes made, but they had not actually started the disassembly. As Judge Duncan noted, there's no dispute that they were getting ready to do that, but when the standard specifically says disassembly of the equipment, and I agree with Judge Higginson, just from a dictionary.
Well, I'm just probing questions to both sides.
I agree with his definition.
Judge Higginson believes.
What he believes is that from a dictionary standpoint, you know, what is equipment? What is disassemble? And it just makes sense that actually taking apart that equipment is the only clear way to read this. And as far as the preamble goes, that you don't need to get to that point because the standard is so directly on point, it's not ambiguous.
Well, let me ask it in this way, and maybe it'll be clearer. Respond to any argument, any suggestion, not mine, that somebody might suggest that you were going through the district assembly process, it failed, and now you're trying to say the disassembly rules don't even apply anyway.
Well, in this particular case, our position would have been until they started taking pins out and disassembling the equipment, that the 1408 would have applied. And with respect to our
argument, even though you don't make that argument in your brief.
Well, Your Honor, our position on that is that we have always argued from the trial in 2017 that the standard did not apply. And it was the Secretary's burden to meet the element of did this standard apply to the facts.
Well, again, it's as old as dirt. When you're trying to point out that one section in a statute doesn't cover something, you say it's obvious this doesn't cover it because the other section covers it. But I want to just make sure we've got our facts here. The four men met together. They made a plan. Once they made the plan, they started lowering the boom.
Yes, Your Honor.
So they were within the phase of disassembling because they were carrying out the plan to disassemble.
They were carrying out a plan called disassembly, but under the standard, it would still not be a disassemble. And the plan, actually, Your Honor, was unfortunately that was Mr. Benson would swing the boom to the right 90 degrees, and unforeseeably, he dropped the boom straight down, and the hoist line made contact with the power lines. That's why even if OSHA says it's a plan of four people, they're working together the same plan, Mr. Benson was the one that dropped the boom into the power line. So that was the concern. It was isolated and unforeseeable. Time went by very fast. Thank you very much, Your Honors. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, we'll try to let all of you know how we really feel as soon as we can.
Thank you.
Hear the last piece?
Yes, please.